Zoom in on global affairs with insightful debates and exclusive interviews. This is World Insight.
Hello and welcome to World Insight with me, Tian Wei. This year's political season, China committed to tap into new quality productive forces while on a big transition of the nation's economy. It's a leg up for China's efforts toward high quality development through innovation and sustainability. The strategy is also a game changer, many believe, in shaping and reshaping the future of production. So exactly how can new quality productive forces contribute to China's economy? What is the best way to harness new technologies? On the sidelines of this year's political season, I talked to tech and economic experts to get some answers.
Production in China will be boosted. There will be a lot of development, and not only domestically, but internationally.
First essence of new quality productive forces is innovation. The second is high quality development. And the third is improving the efficiency of productivity.
New quality productive forces, a phrase that has recently become a buzzword. Marked by innovation, new quality productive forces are believed to represent a diversion from traditional economic growth models, aligning with China's new development philosophy, prioritizing innovation and sustainability. Still a bit abstract, isn't it? Here are some examples. Premier Li Qiang directly mentioned the automobile industry 5 times during his government work report. Auto industry is a typical example, many say, of introducing intelligent manufacturing to achieve a high degree of automation. In the year 2023, China's new energy vehicle production and sales account for more than 60% of the global share. Exports of the 3 new products of electronic vehicles, lithium batteries, and photovoltaic products increased by nearly 30%. Major new energy producers, such as BYD, are the first in the world to propose and implement the entire industry chain layout of new energy vehicles, covering the 3 core technologies of electronic vehicle batteries, motors, and electronic controls.
Future, the destination was Chinese market, which is now number 1 auto market. You should really put all the focus to invest for the new future technology, which should be other battery-operated electric car or other technology.
Another example is the Anhui Transport Consulting and Design Institute developed a design system that automatically generates drawing for commonly used bridge structures. The system has been in operation for over a year and it has generated more than 7,400 drawings.
In the past 40 years, since 1978, we had a rapid growth of the economy, but that's based on a lot of input of the labor, natural resources. It's like a high quantity, but not necessarily high quality. But right now, we need to switch the economic growth model to innovation-led economic growth. So innovation is very important.
In 2023, artificial intelligence achieved a lot of breakthroughs. By the end of the year, China had released over 200 large language models, with more than 20 of them approved to provide services to the public.
I think both science advancement and technology development are equally important. It takes time to transfer a discovery in the science into a practical technology, then to the industry or economics. So we need all the people in the different aspect of the this chain
to work together.
Yeah.
Cutting-edge technology and industry upgrades are creating opportunities for startups while having an impact on the future of education. What is the best way to nurture the younger generation and enable everyone to make the best use of new technologies?
With the rapid advancement in technological development, it is really the right time to think about the idea of high quality productivity forces, right? So we have nurtured more than 1,700 active startups. Mm-hmm. In the last 3 decades, wow. We nurtured 9 unicorns, and we also nurtured, companies that have gone IPOs, 13 of them. And for the biomedical sector, which I believe, has been identified as one of the key strategic areas for the nation, right? So how do we contribute to that? And I think that the contribution from our point of view can be in nurturing future-ready doctors. Mm-hmm. To nurture doctors who embrace the use of new technology in patient care. You know, AI is a wonderful example.
The new quality productive forces is an important factor of the high quality development of China's economy. According to many, the Chinese economy will have great potential and is in a grand transformation.
China have enjoyed 30 years of extremely high growth. I mean, continually for 7 to 8% growth, you know, 10 way is inevitable. You know, have some slowdown, right? China have already achieved an economic miracle. And for us to expect any situation that we can continue the 8% growth, I think is a bit naive. But even at 4-5% today, Tianwei, I think is still encouraging, mm-hmm. because we have reached a very mature status of growth.
So what is the most important factor when evaluating an economy's development status? Should we only factor in numbers like GDP growth, or should we take a holistic view of social and economic realities? The answer, of course, is the latter. According to economists, we have seen earlier examples of developed economies starting with high economic growth rate, followed by a more stable and resilient trajectory afterwards. This time, having talked to deputies and members during the two sessions, I feel a sense of urgency and excitement among them about the new opportunities of new quality productive forces. That's my brief takeaway from the just concluded two sessions in China. Still to come, China's supercharged economic shift needs financial muscle to pull it off. So we've got an MPC deputy, Tsinghua University financial professor Tian Xuan, to crunch the numbers for us next.
Dive into news like never before with Deep Dive, the podcast from CGTN Radio. Join our global reporters for captivating stories and thought-provoking conversations. Search Deep Dive on your favorite podcast platforms and get ready to dive in.
Ever wondered what's actually going on in Africa through the perspective of an African? How are things really going between China and Africa? What's the narrative of this relationship? Well, get a perspective with China-Africa Talk. Hear from African diplomats, entrepreneurs, academics, Chinese natives, and more. Get on our wavelength every week to find out what's real with China-Africa Talk. Find us on your favorite podcast. We'll see you there.
Zoom in on global affairs with insightful debates and exclusive interviews. This is World Insight.
Welcome back. This is World Insight with me, Tianwei. China's streamlined political season this year wrapped up on Monday. The country sets the economic growth target of around 5% this year and creating over 12 million jobs in urban areas. Many hope the new quality productive forces will be the bedrock of China's high quality growth. So how will China achieve its growth target? How much will the new quality productive forces help to generate new growth engines? How much is China capable of dealing with the existing challenges of its economy? Will its financial market create confidence among all investors? I talked to Professor Tian Xuan on the sideline of the just concluded two sessions in Beijing. He's a rising economist in China, deeply involved in providing advice and suggestions to policymakers over the past few years. Professor Chen, China has set its growth target to about 5% for the year 2024. Some consider this as quite an ambitious target. Many wonder, with all these goals, grand ones, how is China going to achieve it?
I agree with you. Actually, there were a lot of discussions starting from second half of last year. Some were quite pessimistic, saying maybe the goal should be set to 4 to 4.5%. Others were quite optimistic.
Which camp did you belong to?
You know, actually, we had a discussion with the government when they were sort of try to ask our opinions.
Right.
At that time, I sort of was in the middle. I think around 5%, this is reasonable goal. You know, like in the last year, the very first year after the COVID-19 pandemic, we had, at that time, we actually, our goal was also around 5%. Yeah. And turns out it was 5.2%.
Indeed.
We had some ups and downs, you know, in terms of the economy, economic growth in the last years. The central government has a lot of policies trying to support the economic growth. Mm. In the new year, in 2024, with the combination of fiscal and monetary policies, mm-hmm. I think this 5% is achievable goal. Certainly, it's not an easy job.
Right.
You may notice that actually Li Qiang, in the government work report, he said we are going to issue ultra-long special government bonds.
Indeed.
And starting from 2024, we are going to have the 1 trillion yuan, which is sort of going to support some infrastructure and also the special areas for technological innovation.
About the issuance of government bonds.
Right.
Some economists traced back the earlier times when large amount of government bonds were issued. For example, around the time of the Asian financial crisis,
yeah.
or a decade later when the global financial crisis was taking place.
Right.
It was usually when the biggest crisis happened,
right.
and China being a very constructive player. So many wonder, what does that mean when the Chinese premier suggested that large amount of government bonds are likely to be issued this year?
Right.
What does that say about the state of the Chinese economy, some suspected?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think the current situation is that the central government has a quite low debt level. Certainly, we have some local government debt issues, but the central government still has a quite large room to issue debt, to stimulate economic growth.
Mm. One could say the local economy is actually making so-called the blood for the overall health of the Chinese economy, isn't it? If the local government debt is not necessarily dealt with more efficiently, how could, even on the issue of ultra-long government debts coming from the central part be possible?
Right. Starting from the last year, the central government has clearly realized the challenges. Mm-hmm. And they have sort of started to find ways to help local governments.
Like what?
Like capital transfer from the central government to the local government. And also sort of trying to maybe extend the debt, have the roll over. Mm-hmm. And I think it's quite effective in terms of now we do not have immediate concerns regarding the local debt issues like last year.
Ultra when you say immediate, what does that mean?
Meaning, the local governments cannot pay off the debt.
All right.
Okay.
So that crisis is last already
crisis
being
is
calmed down.
Calmed down, exactly. I think the point of this ultra-long government bonds is not only trying to solve immediate issues or short-run problems, it also aims to stimulate economic growth in terms of the long run.
Right.
Sort of a very popular new phrase is called new quality productive forces, right? It focuses on innovation, technological innovation. So innovation is very important. And the central government certainly understands innovation is a process of the exploitation of unknown approaches and methods. The process is very long. It's very idiosyncratic and risky. Mm. So,
and sometimes it cannot be planned.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
That's what science is, isn't it?
Exactly. That's what I mean is idiosyncratic. Mm-hmm. You cannot plan it. So it needs, we call it the patient capital.
Yeah.
And the central government actually is a very important driving force to provide this patient capital.
I love that word.
Yeah.
Patient capital.
Well, I don't know the detail, but I'm sure some part of these ultra-long government bonds will be used to solve short-term problems, but most of them will be used to promote
economic growth through technological innovation.
Both sound wonderful, that we are dealing with the existing challenges, calm down the quote-unquote the crisis, in other words, and at the same time encouraging the new quality productive forces.
Right.
But one really wonder whether we could fight so many fires at the same time.
Uh-huh.
For example, there is still the real estate challenges. At the same time, the confidence for the economy among the public to encourage consumption is another thing.
Right.
And the list goes on. Professor, where should we put our money, our energy, our resources?
Well, you know what? Multitasking is obviously issue. Right now, the central government, the main concern is to keep the ball rolling. If we can keep the economic going, I think these issues will be solved
along the way.
For example, consumption. Mm-hmm. So in the last year, I was attending a field study of this MPC. We tried to understand how to stimulate consumption, especially after the COVID-19 pandemic. Generally speaking, you need to have economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you need to increase people's income. The way to increase disposable income is to increase employment. Right. We need to create, actually this year the government says we need to create at least 12 million jobs. That's a very challenging job.
It's
but last year, last year we created even more. Mm-hmm. Last year we had, I remember last year the government work report suggests to create around 12 million jobs, but we create 12.6 million jobs in 2023. So this year we are a little bit more aggressive. Yeah, it's not around 12 million, but it says at least 12 million. So I'm confident that we are going to create enough jobs. The second point is we need to improve our social security system so such that people...
That's so crucial.
Yeah, I need to have money, but I also need to have the ability to spend.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to do a lot of things like healthcare, like education, like housing stuff. That's another challenging job. And thirdly, we sort of need to provide better consumption supply, sort of new consumption goods and services. I think it's certainly challenging, but I'm sure actually through the reasonable, economic development, these issues could be solved more or less.
You see the investigation against Chinese EVs in Europe. You also see more rhetorics coming out of Washington right now.
Mm-hmm.
So when China putting its bet on these new quality productive forces, we see huge complexities related to the development of them. So how much have we counted in these factors?
Right now, it's the right time to promote the economic growth through actually these new productive forces. China-US competition is pretty much everywhere. It's completely different from 20, 30 years ago. At that time, US treated us as a little brother or something like that. But now, our GDP is about three quarters. And this year, it's about around 70% of the US. Certainly, we put a high pressure on US, and they try to do some decoupling, now they say it's de-risking.
Mm-hmm.
We want to participate in global competition and cooperation, but we also have to do the things right for ourselves.
So how is China linked to the rest of the world, including with the business side, with the economic side, but at the same time be able to achieve what China considers as its own confidence and its own approach?
We get a lot of benefit from globalization in terms of supply chain or industrial chain.
Mm-hmm.
Just like people said, we opening up policy cannot be reversed. But as we become stronger and stronger, we certainly get pushback from other countries. That's the reason why we need to develop ourselves. The economic conditions are quite different from, say, 20, 30 years ago. That's the
the foundation of our confidence. But on the other hand, we certainly need to connect to the rest of the world. This is the general policy we should always keep up.
About confidence, Professor Tian, we noticed that during China's annual political season, a number of press conferences were being held. Among them, those leading Chinese financial and economic policy officials. So what are some of the messages from the press conference they made public, the messages that you think can contribute to others' confidence about China's economy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think these financial sector leaders collectively send a very strong signal that developing economy is still the most important things the central government right now cares about. I think that's the biggest confidence. Mm-hmm. I suggested two things. One is to improve the governance. The corporate governance is very important for these public companies, mm-hmm. like the monitoring mechanisms, improve the independence of the independent board members.
Indeed.
And also design some compensation packages mm-hmm. for executives such that we can give incentives for them to work harder, to align the interest between large shareholders, managers, and small shareholders. Mm-hmm. The second suggestion was to impose large penalties mm-hmm. On these activities, that's violations.
From the office desk
right.
to the implementation
right.
and to the small investors,
right.
how they feel temporarily on their skin. That is quite a process.
Right.
What do you think are the most important challenges facing them?
Actually, China's stock market was founded in 1991, mm-hmm. about 30 years ago. So initially, the stock market was aimed to help state-owned companies, state-owned enterprises to get financial resources, financial support. And gradually, we try to emphasize that the stock market, the job of the stock market is not only to provide support, provide financial resources to these public companies who need money, but also to actually allow investors to get reasonable returns. But in the past 30 years, there are a lot of issues in terms of the systems. Mm-hmm. China is very different from US, for example. The biggest problem for China is the block holders. Mm-hmm. We have a single or multiple block holders. They hold a lot of shares. Like my own statistic shows that about 98% of Chinese listed companies have at least one block holders who own more than 10% of mm-hmm. shares. This is crazy, unbelievable in US. In US, if you have a 5% of ownership,
it's
you are called large.
Yeah.
But in China, it's very common to see some block holders may own 20, 30, or even 40% of the ownership. Therefore, this is the conflict of interest between block holders and large, a lot of
small investors.
Therefore, actually, I think many issues, many problems actually come from this observation. So we need to have some solutions to solve these issues. And also we need to make some reform to change the system, the registration system. We actually implemented the registration system starting from 2019. Right. And it's actually have some positive progress. But we need to have a deeper understanding about the registration system. We need to have precise and timely disclosure, but also means we need to have penalties for violations. That's the two important components of the registration system. But in the last couple of years, we observe a lot of companies went public. Mm-hmm. We had probably 400 or even 500 companies going public every year, mm-hmm. right? Some people say there are almost 1,000 firms went public in the past 2 years. That certainly attract a lot of funding from the public market, and some people blame this is the reason that drives the stock market.
Turbulence.
My point is that these regulators have realized the issues, and that they want to do something to change it.
to boost the investors' confidence,
right,
and which ultimately can help China's economic goals.
That's my interview with Professor Tian Xuan from Tsinghua University. That's all the time we have for today. I'm Tian Wei. On behalf of the team, thanks for being with us. Bye for now.